I was absolutely paralyzed. All I could think about was what's going to happen if I have a stroke on this highway. And no logic, nothing was going to fix that. You know, I just had to heal that part of me.
Hi there, and welcome to the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host. And in this podcast, we're talking about all the ways women reinvent ourselves as we move toward our 40s and beyond. Whether you're hoping to make a career change, are rediscovering parts of yourself that went dormant during the early years of motherhood, or maybe are trying to pay more attention to your health and wellness, Mother of Reinvention is here to inspire and inform you as you ask yourself, what's next? Pretty much everyone I know has faced a setback at some point in their lives, but some setbacks are bigger than others. While those challenges can be limiting, they can also inspire courage, commitment, and can help us get really clear about how we want to spend our time. In this episode, I'm really excited to interview my big sister, Catherine. Catherine is 10 years older than me, and I've always looked up to her. She has four kids who've basically grown up right alongside mine, and she spent much of her 20s and 30s as a broke single mom just trying to hold it all together. In Catherine's late 40s, her life really started to come together and she finally had a little more money and time. She was able to spend more time doing what she loved to do. But then at age 50, an aneurysm ruptured in her brain and took our entire family on a very unexpected journey, of course, Catherine especially. Thank goodness she did make a full recovery, which seemed miraculous at the time. But as Catherine explains in this episode, it took her a while to heal emotionally from that trauma. And she really relied on holistic practices and modalities like acupuncture, EFT, and yoga, plus a large dose of optimism and grit to help her through. Now at 54, Catherine's life looks pretty much back to normal on the outside, even though, of course, she's always going to feel in some ways different on the inside. Also, last year, Catherine decided to complete yoga teacher training at a local studio, and today she tells us about that challenging process, what she learned from it, and what she's taken away as she looks toward a very bright future. We will dig into this really special conversation in just a minute, but first I want to talk about our season sponsor, Vionic. Friends, I went to Napa last week and I basically lived in my yellow Nana casual sneakers. I paired them with jeans and a cute top for a full day of wine tasting, dressed them up with a jacket and jewelry for dinner out, and they kept me going day to night in comfort. I got so many compliments on them in real life and in the photos, but this didn't surprise me, because Vionic footwear has got the combination of style and comfort down. Vionic offers boots, booties, sneakers, and even dressy flats and heels that are all ridiculously comfortable with stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. With Vionic's 30-day wear test, you can return any pair of shoes for 30 days for a full refund, even if they've been worn outside. So there's no risk. To check out the Nana sneakers or something else from Vionic's collection, go to vionicshoes.com and use the promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's vionicshoes.com and use the promo code MORE, M-O-R, for free shipping. Okay, now let's dive into my conversation with my sister, Catherine. Well, hello, Catherine. Thanks for being on the Mother of Reinvention show.
Sure, this is pretty exciting, actually. I'm looking forward to this talk.
And I think where I want to start with you is kind of like in your late 40s, let's just describe where you'd been. So you're a mom of four. You'd been a single mom for a long time. You still had a young child. Quinn was like, I'm trying to think how old. Well, Quinn is now 16. So I'm talking like when he was still young enough to be, you know, not really capable of getting himself around or, you know, really not saying he is capable of taking care of himself yet either, because we all know how 16-year-olds are, but you know what I mean. But you had just started, now you owned a home with your then long-term boyfriend, now husband, Eric. You had, you guys were like always working on it. You'd started to do things that you really loved doing again that you hadn't had time for as this kind of perpetually harried, I hate to put you in that term, but like you always had a lot going on and a single mom before. There's just a lot happening. And now finally, here you are in the stage of your life where you're working in a museum and like working toward becoming a docent in a history museum, and all of these cool things are happening. And then you're 50, and tell us what happens.
So I'm 50. And don't forget, a big part of what was driving me before was a constant, being constantly broke.
Right.
So you know, with all of the kid things going on, I feel like in my 30s and early 40s, especially, I was also trying to keep food on the table. So that was also a driver. And suddenly then I get another job with a living wage for a change. And I move in with a, responsible, sort of respectable, wonderful dude. And I have a little bit of time for the first time. And yes, a little bit of freedom to kind of explore the things that I want to be doing. So I was 50 and had a brain aneurysm. And that, although it was a very serious one. I had fixes that I needed in my future. I still have a brain aneurysm that is being monitored. Having something like that happen really did sort of put things on reset for a while. And I spent a good part of 50 and 51 just sort of putting myself back together, I feel like, emotionally and in every other way, just trying to become normal again so that I wasn't worried when I left the house or went out of town or any of those kinds of things.
Right.
A miracle, really. But nonetheless, it was a hard time.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed I interviewed you on the Mom Hour. I want to say it was only like a year or so after it had happened. So if, that's a good place to go back and listen to, like, when it was a little more raw and recent and like you really went into a lot of what happened that day, like your symptoms, how we knew that that was happening and like what that initial recovery was like. So I don't want to repeat too much of that today because we've got, onward and upward things to talk about, but I'll link to that so that if people are curious, they can go hear that in that conversation between us. I think that was a couple of years ago that we did that one. But without going into too much detail around exactly what happened, you were hospitalized for quite some time. You had to go back in for a brain surgery later. So it really did take you out. Was there any time where you thought, man, this is so unfair? Like, I just started doing stuff again. Like your job at the History Museum, that was something you were so excited to do. And you had really just, I can't remember where you were in that stage, but like you'd really just gotten into it and everything's like looking up. And not to mention that a brain aneurysm was something that you had worried about your whole life. So what, without like having to go through every surgery and procedure that you had, because I don't think we have time for that today. Like, what was some of that emotional space you were coming from? Like, did you ever think, first of all, I can't believe I basically knew my fate, that this was going to happen to me. But also, did it feel like it wasn't fair? Or did you really feel that I can't believe I actually survived this and now I'm going to grab life by the balls kind of thing?
Well, it was a little bit of all of that. I definitely, I always had, it's kind of silly, but it's not. When I told people what had happened or when people found out, I had been saying all along, like, oh, you wait and see. Someday I'm going to just drop over and it's going to be an aneurysm. And every time I would hear about that from the time I was probably 15 on, I thought, that's what's going to get me. And I'll be danged if that didn't, if that didn't happen. So note to anyone saying things like that.
Except it didn't get you. Except it didn't get you. So that's like the
it
twist.
It didn't get me. It surely didn't.
Yeah.
It should have twisted. Spoiler alert, here I am. It didn't get me. But, part of what I struggled with for a long time was how many times people kept telling me how lucky I was. Mm. And so here I am in the hospital with bandages on my head. And you saw me. I mean, it was kind of a wreck, telling me I was so lucky, lucky, lucky. And I know that I was. And in retrospect, certainly I know that. But it was a hard thing to hear. It was a very isolating feeling because that's the last thing I felt. I felt anxious and awful and sort of in pain. And here I was having the thing that I had been the most afraid of. And yes, to all the rest too. I'm missing work. I'm missing what the kids are doing. I'm all the stuff that I wanted to do, I'm not doing. I came home, and although my recovery really under the circumstances were pretty darn good, it took me a long time. I always kind of say that Western medicine saved my life. There's no getting around that. But it was sort of all the other stuff that I tried, which was acupuncture and massage and, sort of other kind of more esoteric types of healing, energy medicines, that kind of saved my life. That's what healed me.
Yeah. So that's like the Western medicine
so that
kept
I
you alive.
Go to your house and it sure did. Yeah,
but
and
like,
I can't stress that enough. I am a firm believer in science and all of the things that science did for me and continues to do for me. Technology is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But it was a lot of other modalities that sort of made it so that, well, you remember, Megan, when I drove to your house one time.
Yes.
And I had a panic attack in the car. I asked you to come and drive the rest of the way with me because, you know, this was maybe 6 months later. It was an early visit. And it's a trip I've made 50 million times. But I was absolutely paralyzed. All I could think about was what's going to happen if I have a stroke on this highway. And no logic, nothing was going to fix that. And
right.
After that, and as part of that, I knew that, you know, I just had to heal that part of me because I was very afraid all the time.
Yeah. And I also remember there were some camping trips and hiking trips that we had really started to get into a lot of outdoorsy stuff together. Mm-hmm. And then that was something that you just were not comfortable doing for a while. And the irony really is, and this is why anxiety is so toxic and terrible, and yours was very well deserved, but the irony is you had never been safer. You had never, like, they went in and took care of it.
Right.
You know, like, your aneurysms were all taken care
right.
of, all
right.
stitched up. And so you'd actually never
right.
been safer before, but now there's this fear because you know, like,
yes.
you know too much, and now you know what it was like. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I have often kind of laughed in groups of people thinking to myself, I'm probably the only one here who knows for a fact that my brain is fine right now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
There is nothing lurking in there that they don't see, that they don't check out every
yeah.
6-8 months. I mean, it's reviewed quite regularly. So you're absolutely right.
So you mentioned...
You're absolutely right.
You mentioned the modalities that you leaned into. Acupuncture, I know, was one of them. And we're going to talk a little bit about yoga in a little while. Were there others that you were working on that were specifically... I don't know. I'm thinking... I think of yoga and some of those things as things that you rely on as kind of like a mindset overall, but they aren't like what you use when you're in acute terror. Did you have strategies
yeah,
you were
so
able to
I,
lean
I did
on?
Tapping, EFT,
okay.
EFT tapping. Mm-hmm. I went to an energy medicine specialist who helped me with other kinds of things that was surprisingly complex. It was a little bit too challenging for me, where tapping was very easy. Meditation, you know, those kinds of things, which I had been flirting with long before, thankfully. So yes, and tapping, for example, is something that can be done in acute stress situations. So that was the kind of thing that I was learning and reading about, going to see people for. Certainly yoga. I found at our yoga studio, they did traumatic brain injury yoga. Love Your Brain, it's called.
Wow.
So the room was a little darker and they were sensitive to brain injuries.
That's very niche.
I latched onto that.
Right. Tell me more about EFT. I'm really curious what I've heard of it, but
I think it's emotional freedom technique, and it's literally like using your fingers and an affirmation to control mostly anxiety. It can be used for phobias. I was first introduced to it while I was doing birth hypnosis.
That's what
Finn.
I was going to say. It sounds a lot like the hypnobirthing.
Yes. But this actually uses physical tapping on different parts of your face and then body, chest area, to relieve stress or whatever is kind of ailing you. And it's pretty effective as far as it goes. I mean, it's again, I wouldn't want it to fix an aneurysm, but it definitely, at least at a minimum, gives you something else to think about when you're going through an acute stress situation. And I've enjoyed it over the years for a variety of things, and then kind of let it go and then find that it's useful for something again.
So is it that
it's pretty cool?
Is it like, is it triggering your body to, or your mind, I guess, to go to a different place? Like, what is the tapping actually doing? It almost sounds like it's a reminder.
You know, that's
like,
don't know.
Oh, okay. You don't know.
It is a reminder.
Yeah.
I don't know what the value to the specific, when you're tapping in specific locations. And all of the different trainings and books that I've seen and all of that, it's always, more or less the same, little variation, but, you know, there's, I don't know, a half a dozen spots. And I'm not entirely sure what is
happening,
what part of the activity is fixing what ails you, but right. It does seem to work somewhat. It does seem to alleviate some acute stress. Hmm. That's what I can say.
So when you were getting,
it's pretty cool.
When you
it's
were
a cool
kind of
thing to explore.
Yeah, that does sound cool. And I'm thinking when you were coming out of that first, you know, year where it was like you were just really, really focused at first on your physical recovery. Getting out of the hospital was important, and then being able to kind of function in the world and having a second brain surgery. But at some point you were starting to like really kind of want to get back out there and like you said, heal some of these things. Was there any assistance for that from your medical professionals, or is this something you kind of had to figure out on your own? I'm just wondering how you put together your own personal like self-care program at that point that would help you with that healing process.
No, I had to do that on my own. And really, surprisingly, maybe it didn't require a ton of follow-up appointments and things like that. I don't spend a lot of time in the doctor's office or with medical people, really. So I did that on my own, but I was pretty motivated. And again, because things like EFT, I had explored that before, yoga, those sorts of things I had dabbled with for years to various degrees of commitment. So I knew what to look for.
Yeah.
But I did that on my own.
And would you say by year, like when would you say you were starting to feel, and I hate the word normal, but like yourself again, like about when you were really able to be back in the workplace, doing your job at the museum again, like those kinds of things. How long did that take?
Well, I think there was a huge psychological lift when the year mark passed. So that was just a psychic kick in the butt. Like, all right, it's a year has passed. Nothing happened today. I remember sort of just, you know, gritting my teeth the entire day in December when it was a year later, wondering what could possibly befall me. And nothing did. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
And then it was the next day. And suddenly I thought, all right, I'm a year out. And I'll tell you, there ain't a trip I go on. I was out of town this weekend in a little town up north. I always now think to myself, I wonder where the closest hospital is, or which is something that was so far out of my thinking in the past that never occurred to me. I never thought to think about, you know, how I would get somewhere in an emergency. It just never was part of my thinking. And it's, I don't want to say it's always a part of my thinking now, but whenever I take a trip, I at least once leading up to it think, I'm going away. I'm around people maybe that don't really know me, won't know what normal behavior looks like.
Right.
What if I have a stroke on the trip? You know, all that sort of thing. It always pops in my head. I sort of had to commit to myself that I would never say no out of that fear to anything. You know, when we go take trips up to the UP or whatever, it's there in the back of my head somewhere. Sometimes I'm thinking, that felt a little weird. What if right. I'm having a stroke right now? But I kind of always told myself that I will never allow myself to not do something out of that fear. So I do it.
And you've done a lot.
I can't say
then.
That it doesn't Yes. I can't say that it doesn't pop up into my head.
Yeah. And you're a very active person. I mean, you're really, you know, you bike a lot, you walk a lot, you hike and camp and you do all of these things. You do yoga with your head down on the ground and your butt up in the air. Like,
yeah.
Like you're doing a lot of things that if you let yourself be in that headspace of fear, it would make life unlivable, really.
Yes, that is true. And it's funny that you say that because one of the things I was finally able just in my late 40s, just prior to that that stroke, I was able to do headstands in yoga. And I never was so proud. I couldn't even do headstands when I was a teenager. Like it was just something I could never do. And I did it. I did it and I was doing it as part of my practice. And after that, it took years really for me to get the courage up. Even just going upside down, of course, was hard. And that was challenging. And then I realized, okay, I can do this. I can be in downward facing dog. I can do these things. You know, my doctor said, yes, it's fine. Catherine, you're cool. Go for it. But I still could not stand on my head. And then one day, with the help of a teacher, I did it. And now I can do it again.
Wow.
But that was hard. That was a big thing to get past.
I mean, I can imagine. I can imagine you sitting there like really fixating on the physiology of what's happening. Like all of the blood is rushing to these vessels. Yes. Do these vessels even work? So, yeah. I mean,
yes,
again,
and, you know, I have a shunt in my head now.
Yeah.
So that shunt, I'm always thinking about what that shunt and I asked my neurosurgeon this specifically, and he said, well, Catherine, yes, that's the whole point of the shunt. Like it will admit it'll fix the pressure for you. You know, you're good. Do it. Go do it. But it's still required that I actually do it before I could get past it. That was hard. That was a really hard thing and something I was very proud of myself for attempting and then doing.
I forgot about old Shunty. I forgot that he's still in your head.
yes.
Yeah. And at one point you weren't even sure if it was still working. It's just, it's like the body is so crazy and miraculous and weird in the way it works. And you might never really know if it's really doing anything or if your body's just doing it on its own and like what it's just there.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really want to get
rattling around in there.
Exactly. I really want to get more into this yoga journey. We're going to take a quick break. But when we get back, I'm so excited to talk about the next part of our conversation because you actually did something I have been just running my mouth about doing for a long time. And that is you did yoga teacher training. Not necessarily to teach, although I know that that's still something you're considering, but just to kind of do it. And I think you and I have had some really interesting conversations about it, and I think that our listeners are going to love it. So we will be right back. Hey, all, just a reminder that one of the best ways you can help a podcast gain traction and find its audience is by leaving a review wherever you listen. Those reviews not only help other people find the show and figure out if it's a good fit for them, but they also help us podcasters as we're planning new content and future seasons of the show. Wherever you listen, your review helps so much. So please look for Mother of Reinvention in your podcast app and leave a rating or review. Also, I would love to hear from you directly. If you've left a review and want to make sure I see it, go ahead and take a screenshot and email it to motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com or just email me with any suggestions you might have for future episodes. Again, that's motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. I can't wait to hear from you. Okay, Catherine. So just setting the stage that yoga is something you and I have been into together for a long time. I think we started going to class together when we were both young moms. Like I want to say my oldest were really little. So maybe I was like 23. I mean, it was a very different life for both of us. We were both like harried single moms. broke and overworked. But we made time every week to go to a yoga class together and loved it. And then I think that really in very different ways started these journeys for both of us differently. I did have to just tell you as an aside that I did buy the Raquel Welch Total Fitness book, which was my first primer to yoga.
The best.
And I found it on the internet and had it sent to my house. And it was like going back in time. I loved it. And I feel like you got that book from mom and had it for a while, right? Did you have it?
I do. I have it.
Oh,
I
you have still it have it? Still. Oh, I didn't even know that. Oh, my God. I love it so much. And I still love it every bit as much now as I did when I was, I don't know, like 9 years old. But anyway, so yoga goes like, and I also just wanted to say that our mom was in no way the type. Like, there was nothing hippie about our upbringing, especially considering that this was like way before yoga and Eastern anything was mainstreamed at all. Like, it was very much a fringy new age thing. And for whatever reason, my mom bought this Raquel Welch book that our mom that is a, essentially a yoga practice and a really good primer. I think like it's surprising how well it's really stood the test of time. There are certain things she says in there that I don't think would fly anymore, but like, I just, most of it really is, it's like really good photos. And anyway, so that was kind of where I think we both got exposed. And then we kind of journeyed through it together when we were like 20 years ago now. So since then we've, you know, departed where we don't live in the same town anymore, but I feel like our yoga journeys have kind of kept in pace with each other. And we've like, they, we can be very motivating for each other. When I did that challenge a few years ago, you kind of did a challenge of your own where I did that. I did like a 60 yoga classes in 60 days challenge at my local studio. And then you did kind of your own version. And anyway, we've gone back and forth. And last year around this time, I want to say it was like right before the Christmas holidays. I was like, you know what? I think maybe
it was
right after. Okay. I said, maybe I'm going to do yoga teacher training.
Yeah.
I had just seen it come up and on my, like from my local studio, it sounded like a really good idea. And the funny thing is I didn't do it, but you did. So you just jumped on it and signed up. And within like, I don't know, a month, I feel like you were in class. So tell us about why you did that. Like what the decision-making process was like, and then I know we're all dying. Cause I feel like this is such a classic middle-aged woman thing to decide to like, become a marathon runner or get like rescue dogs or become a yoga teacher trainer. Yeah. So in training.
No, that is true. I, well, for me, I had talked about it. I had thought about it, you know, forever. It's just been sort of, you know, something that I thought, oh, wouldn't that be interesting? Or wouldn't that be fun? Again, really, truly not to be a teacher so much, but because my favorite classes are those that are really steeped in philosophy. I go to a pretty traditional studio. So, you know, the chanting and all of that kind of thing. And I had this idea that going to yoga teacher training would be just weekends of extended chanting and weekends of extended talking about philosophy and learning Sanskrit and all of that. Well, so I talked and talked and talked and I told my husband a million times and I told my kids and I told you and I kicked around the idea. And finally, when you were talking about it, when you started, and I thought to myself, Catherine, if you don't do it this time, I looked at and sure enough, our school's having a class, then you should never talk about it again.
Now that is a great ultimatum. Myself. Like that's a great way to force yourself to do something. Like put up or shut up, yes, literally. Yes.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. I told myself, Catherine, if you don't do it this time, just you don't get to talk about it anymore because it's silly. It were in COVID times, you know, it was a mostly virtual, not entirely virtual, but mostly virtual program because we all had to be. And it's winter now. This is, you know, January, February, and March. We couldn't do anything else.
Right.
Literally everything about the timing was perfect. And I believed that I had no more right to just keep on kicking it down the road, keep talking about it if I wasn't willing to just sign up and do it. So I did. And it took 3 months. And I will say in some ways it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I remember telling you, like, now I hate yoga. Calling you up and saying, yes. I used to love yoga, but now I hate yoga. Because it was so very, very challenging on every level. And so much work. It was not an easy program. It was tough. Something that when I got done with it and finally taught that class, I really did feel like I had, if I never taught another class, if I never did anything more official than show up for regular old led classes, I will not regret it. And I feel super, super duper good for having gotten through it.
So talk about what it, I do remember you telling me that at one point you had said to the instructor, Hillary, something like, am I really expected to be able to do these poses? And she said, no one can do them, or something like that. Like the physical part was, I think, what you weren't expecting and what you found the most challenging, like just how hard it is to do some of what was being asked and for how long you had to do it, because these are long days.
Yes. So, and it would be more than one yoga class in one day sometimes. So what, as I said, what I expected, what I hoped was just a whole lot of philosophical discussion. That's what I dreamt of when I thought of yoga classes, but yoga teacher training. The expectation is, though, she expected us as yoga teacher trainees to push ourselves and attend classes that we had not taken before, that we did not feel prepared for. I am a vinyasa lover. I don't want to say that I seek out easy classes, but I find that what I go into yoga for, I like repetition. I find it very soothing and meditative when I kind of know how to do everything already. Mm-hmm. So I can focus on breathing and so I don't seek out classes that I can't do, that I just know I can't do, right, you know, that are beyond me. So suddenly now I'm required to take, you know, advanced power. That was laughable, really. Watching me struggle in this class made me feel, watching myself struggle, just unbelievably inept. However, that was only me. That is not the way my yoga teacher expects us to feel or wants us to feel. I mean, that's sort of the yogic exercise, right? Is putting you're in a situation that you don't know how to do. How do you handle it? What does your mind go to when there is a position that you can't do, that your body does not do yet? Where does your mind go? Do you panic? Do you? And that was the exercise. And that, I think, is what she wanted us to learn. How are you reacting when you are above your level, if you will? How do you react? Are you able to accommodate? Are you able to calm yourself? Are you able to breathe through it? Do you panic? Do you just say, oh man, I hate this. I hate everything about this. Or, and how you handle a pose, she will say, is how you handle life. Do you try anyway? And so I felt very bad about what I was doing. Here I had finally gotten to a place in my life, you know, where I had been doing some running and, as you said, hiking and all of the things that I kind of wanted to do my whole younger life and couldn't. And then I was doing it. And now here I am deliberately choosing this path that is making me feel kind of frumpy and old and cruddy again. But that's me. That's not what yoga is. And that's not what my teacher thought. She's not sitting back there going, oh my God, what, you know.
Look at her.
You're lousy.
Look at Catherine in the back row. Yikes. Yeah. No wonder she doesn't go to power. Well, you know, I've made the joke on this show before that, like, advanced power is the kind of class that, like, I would, you know, knock over people to not have to go to that class. Like, just like, there, you know, yes. I'm a member of my studio and there are times when I will really try to, like, fit in a class every single day, but not if it's that one. And I know for me, it's almost like a mental block at this point. Like, really, would it kill me just to try it? But I have this thing, and this is all our ego. This is all what we get caught up in the mind chatter. Yes. And there's, like, that moment when you're in a class like that and you put your foot down, at a three-legged dog or something, or whatever. You put your knee down when you're inside, like, something, like, it's not the perfect expression of the pose, right? It's your modification. And that, I always feel like, is the moment that the instructor says something that I feel like is aimed at me. I know it's not. Like, logically, she did not choose that minute to ask if we're all, like, working to our edge because she saw me put my knee down. Like, there's a whole class going on. There's other people with their knee down, I promise you, or other people who look like they're struggling. This is not meant to, like, single me out and make me feel inadequate. However, that's where our minds can go. And then what does that teach us? And so like what, you know, you're saying like you had this really hard, like you learned a lot about yourself. You struggled. It was really hard. What do you think was the takeaway for you from that whole experience now that you've got some distance from it?
I think the takeaway is that, yes, I can do it. I got through it. I did it to whatever ability I could do it on that day. I am always reassured by the sort of, you know, yoga teacher talk when you're in a class and they say, oh, you know, it might be different tomorrow. You know, you're doing it today. Maybe you'll feel differently tomorrow. That's the whole, you know, point of yoga is always having a frame of reference, just seeing how you are on any given, at any given moment. So I got through it and I do feel like the takeaway for me was that, yes, I can. Yes, it was terribly uncomfortable, both physically and mentally and in every other level, but I did it. I never was so afraid. I am not afraid of public speaking. I don't have a fear of being in front of people, but the fear of teaching a yoga class was paralyzing. And I worry about that now. I think, huh, Catherine, do you just not want to teach because you're just afraid of that feeling? I did it. I did it that one time.
Right.
And I feel quite accomplished for having done so. But it was hard. I've never been in a public facing situation that was as hard as that, because when you're teaching yoga, it's being up in front of people, which isn't the problem, but it's kind of exposing yourself to and really being, you know, saying words that aren't necessarily familiar to you or talking about things in a way that you don't usually have to, in ways you don't usually have to communicate. So that was tough.
And you're leading people through an experience. You're leading people through that experience. So you really need to know what you're talking about and safely guide them. You know, you have to really help them learn something that you just learned. I mean, if you can do a lot of yoga classes and still get to the end, it's like when you go on autopilot, when you drive, get to the end and be like, what just happened? I couldn't repeat what someone else just told me to do, even if I've done it 200 times.
Right. That's right.
So,
you know, I learned that I can do stuff.
Yeah.
I can do stuff.
And you're doing yoga. You're still practicing. You're not teaching, but you're still practicing.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Is there anything now when you take a class, do you feel like your training gave you a window into, I don't know, like what's happening that you didn't have before? Like, has it changed the experience of going to class for you?
Yeah. So for a while I was in yoga teacher training, and this is, I think, when I was complaining the most to you, it was, I wasn't enjoying my classes so much because everything I did seemed like another little mini lesson. I wasn't doing it for me so much. So that was 3 months of classes that I go to probably 4 days a week, that I used to absolutely adore. Now I'm going in and it's all homework. It's all, oh, wait, right. Maybe that's a good little sequence. How can I remember that sequence? How will I incorporate this? So now I'm back in and I can just be in there because I love any given class. But one insight that was very interesting to me that I use in every single class, and that is that, you know, as the teacher and as a teacher trainee, one of the things that you look for at watching a student, so now I kind of try to be that student, is that an advanced student isn't necessarily, and I don't consider myself advanced really, but for once in my life, I can say that I'm solidly intermediate, which is a good feeling. I used to call myself a beginner for 10 years, but I can say I'm an intermediate student at least now. But one of the things that a teacher will look for is how well you are practicing your own practice. So does this person know how to modify? That the teacher gives a direction, gives a posture, and what they might consider an advanced student is one that knows how to make that posture his or her own, if you know what I mean. So I don't feel so badly now if I go to my knees in a chaturanga, because I used to think, oh, what is the teacher going to think? Now, what I would think if I was the teacher, and sort of what I was led to believe, is that student is paying attention to how her, his or her body feels and knows how to modify to make it work for their body today.
Yeah.
So I had hurt my shoulder for a while. And so I'd figured out, I kind of was skipping chaturangas for a while. And before I went to teacher training, I was almost feeling like I'd have to apologize and explain that.
Right.
After teacher training, I realized, wait, you know, the teacher knows. So I know this is a lowering and this is also a heart opener. So if I am breathing and I am opening my heart when the rest of the class is opening my heart, sort of an ego thing, but they know I know what I'm doing.
Right. You don't have to worry that they're like, that's they think you don't know or that you they think you're being lazy or whatever. Like, I think that's what our brains tell us.
Right. Sometimes. Or that I'm just too weak or whatever. Right. But now what I believe is I could go into a yoga class anywhere and I would hope that I would have a teacher that would say, you know what? Nope. This person knows what the goal is, what this posture is supposed to achieve. It's a heart opener. It's a back bend. It's a whatever. But she is making it her own today. And that is what makes it A, so wonderful to be in, to be doing it, because you're doing it for yourself. This is your practice. It's your thing. And you know how to do it. You might not be, as you called it, the perfect expression of the posture. It might not be the way Raquel Welch is doing it in her book, but it is the way you can do it today with your shoddy balance or, you know, your hurt knee or whatever, and still get the benefit.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you an experienced practitioner.
Well, that's,
and that to me changed, that changed everything.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think that's a really good perspective and a way to look at it because, you know, it's not about struggling and, you know, this is definitely not the like no pain, no gain perspective. It's right. Something we should be able to modify and adapt for the rest of our lives, really, and continue to be experienced and proficient, you know, at it, even if the way we practice it looks different over the years. So, Catherine, we need to wrap up soon, but I want to know, like, what's next for you? You've been really for the last decade, I feel like, lining up goals and just knocking them down. You know, with a little sideline when your brain kind of exploded on you there. But, you know, I'm looking now and saying, okay, so you're in your mid-50s. You know, you're 10 years older than me. So I'm always looking up to you and looking ahead at what you're doing as like, oh, my life might look like that at some point. What is next? Are you going to just keep doubling down on the things that you're really into now? Do you have other adventures planned, other things you want to try?
Well, I'm definitely doubling down on the things that I am doing now. I am enjoying my work at, you know, at the museum. I love docenting. I love that sort of thing. And so I'm actually, you know, thinking like, maybe do I just want to go back to college? I mean, and I mean like going back and immersing myself in a way that I was not able to do the first time around with kids and all of that. There is a very big part of me that would love to go back and do like archaeology and the thing that I wish that I had always wished that I had done and just flirted with class here and a class there since. So I wouldn't say that that is a committed goal yet. I'm not quite ready to put it there, but it's something that I talk about verbally at least once a week about just going back to college.
And you've been talking about archaeology for a long time. At some point, will this be the thing where you'll be like, I'm either going to do it or I'm going to stop talking about it? Because that seems to be an effective motivator for you.
Yes, that is it. So that is exactly it. And it's sort of a slow process with me, but I'm not necessarily one that just jumps out there. But I can feel myself getting there. Like at some point, I'm going to tell myself, Catherine, you know, you've just lost your right to keep telling yourself this and keep telling the world, oh, what you're going to do, what you're going to do, what you're going to do if you don't do it. You know, that there's a few pieces to put into play there. I don't really have to worry about daycare and things like that anymore, but you know, I still have a job. I've got finances. When can I retire? You know, things like that. But I feel like that could be you know, a real, you know, hell of a great adventure.
Yeah.
You know, moving, I don't know. We just have all kinds of ideas and thoughts, and it's so wonderful to kind of be in a position where, you know, you can finally really think, huh, you know, I work a few more years, maybe I can really make some big changes. That is what we've got some pals that call that the burden of opportunity. And it is.
Yeah.
It's almost embarrassment of riches. I struggled a long, long time. And now when you're in a situation where, golly, you're not doing something, it's really just because your mind, it's not necessarily financial. It's not necessarily because you've got kids at home. It's not necessarily none of those kinds of things anymore, which are always, for me, grand excuses.
Yeah.
To half step. Those things are being removed sort of one by one. And that is it's a wonderful burden to have. It's wonderful. And I am grateful every day that I get encouragement and, you know, that I'm able to even entertain these ideas. But that means that I have to make them happen. I have to execute it. And that's scary and weird. And
do you ever find that you are like, I use this phrase sometimes, that it's almost like the muscle memory of the way things were when you were like that stressed out, broke, single mom of a bunch of kids who couldn't really do anything. And it's almost like that gets in it's like a stress response, or like it's like so deeply ingrained in you that you forget that's not the way it is anymore. And you almost have to retrain yourself that like, actually life has opened up a lot. Actually, I do have time. Actually, I do have money. I have personally, and I'm not even where you are yet in life, but I've found that to be kind of a struggle. I tell myself a story sometimes it's not true.
Very much so. That is very, very much the case. It is just sort of it's almost like I don't mean to trivialize PTSD, but it is like that in a sense, in that you just sort of default to the, it's never a good time, or I got to do it this way, or, oh, but I've got, you know, this 16 at home who basically doesn't even care if I'm at home.
Right.
Probably would prefer that I'm not most of the time. So, you know, that kind of knee-jerk fallback it's not appropriate anymore for my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, that's a constant retraining. And then you're sticking your neck out there when you're a little older, which is weird, I think, not to people anymore, but it's weird to yourself. Like, why would I even consider at this age, 54 years old, of going back to college? That's dumb. People don't do that. What if I don't? What if I die owing, you know, $10,000 in student loans or whatever? I mean, I've actually, Eric and I've had that conversation. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
So, you know, so I'm 80 and I'm still paying off my student loan debt that I would inevitably rack up. I mean,
okay. There's worse things.
I don't care.
Right.
Right.
I love it.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, we'll see. I can't say for sure what the next adventure will be, but I'm having a really nice time. You know, I was at this weekend, not to take too much longer, but I spent the weekend with 10 women, 9 other women that I graduated from high school with, some of whom I have not seen in 35 years. I haven't even laid eyeballs on them probably since we walked across the stage at graduation. And we had the best time, and it struck me what a great age this is. Not for everyone. We are lucky. But how, by and large, these women are grabbing life and are enjoying themselves. And when you're 30 and you got a bunch of kids and you're running around, I mean, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, how lucky it is. And we all sort of commented on how good it feels to be out. You know, I always say that when I'm riding my bike, it feels like I'm 10 years old. And then I think about it. I think, no, this is way better because I'm an adult and I can stay out as long as I want, and I can ride in the dark on the middle of the road, and I can also stop and get a beer if I want to. And there's really nothing better than the sort of freedom that I have right now. And it's neat. And it was neat to be around women who all kind of felt the same way. We're all exactly the same age. Every one of us had as different a life, different a career choice. Some of them are grandmothers, for crying out loud. But everybody felt very similarly satisfied. In spite, and there were lots of health problems, you know, and of course you get together, I guess, at 54 and you talk about your menopause and your health problems and all that. Nobody's, you know, 100%, but I'll be damned if everybody just wasn't thinking to themselves, yep, this is where you want to be. This is the age you want to be right now. So it was very, very, very wonderful. And it could have been so weird. We just didn't know. Nobody really knew, I don't think, but how it would turn out. But it turned out to be great.
I love it. Well, Catherine, this has been so fun. It's been fun catching up. Yeah. I love hearing what's going on in your head. And, you know, with yoga and everything else, and like what that experience is like. Like I said, I think there's a lot of curiosity out there about what it's actually like to go through it. But I think and ultimately you thought it was worth it, worthwhile, and you learned a lot.
Yes.
Just be prepared for it to be very difficult.
I did. I learned so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I'll say, you know, I laughed and said that I thought it would just be all philosophy and Sanskrit and chanting. And we did do a lot of that. So that to me made it, I love that. And it made it just so wonderfully worthwhile. But all of it was, I learned a lot about myself. And, you know, it was sort of billed to me as something that you should do for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I believe that. I did think that really I got out of it so very, very much. That, you know, just because it was intense and hard.
Right.
And that's, you know, beneficial.
Yeah.
So if somebody can swing it, I highly recommend it.
I also want to take this moment to mention that if you were listening to, you know, obviously you listened to the whole episode and you heard Catherine's story about her aneurysm. I did read that your age, Catherine, is it the exact average age where if a woman is going to have something like that happen, 50 is that age. So if you have a family, if you have a family history, go have it. And you're approaching that age, especially if you have any kind of family history of like vein issues, blood vessel issues, aneurysms in your family, or like unexplained strokes that weren't ever diagnosed as brain aneurysms. I think those can, like there's two kinds of strokes, and I don't think they always know after the fact.
Yes.
Which was which.
Yes. And this was a hemorrhagic stroke. So it was a blow, not a block. But I will say that when I was in the hospital, I was like, oh, I said to one of the nurses, I bet this never happens. Here I am, you know, only 50 years old. And she said, literally, are you kidding me? You are exactly, I've had 10 of you.
Right.
And the other thing is, Megan, to your point, an aneurysm is one of those things that you do want to check out and learn about because they can fix them often.
Right.
So, you know, they're scary and they're creepy. And I have one still in my head that's lurking around, but it's well managed. They have fixed others. If I have a friend at work who's been diagnosed with one, she'll have it fixed. And that's that then.
Yep. It's not so, even like, you're not even on like maintenance meds to take care of it. It's like they fix it and then it's fixed.
Correct.
Yeah. That's good to keep in mind. Cause I think
so
sometimes people
want to know about it.
Yeah. Sometimes I think there's that la 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 thing. We just want to kind of put our hands over our ears and eyes and not know because we don't think there's anything that can be done. And in this case, it's very fixable. So that's a good note to leave people with so that if you have anything like that in your family or any reason to believe this is something you should have checked out, go have it checked out. Well, thank you so much, Catherine, for being on the show. I'm actually going to get in my car in 3 hours and come visit you. So we'll be like listeners. We are going to be together when this drops. So that's really fun. And I will talk to you later. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, Vionic, and my favorite fall loafer, the Willa Flat. Remember, you can get free shipping by going to vionicshoes.com and using the code MORE, that's M-O-R, at checkout. If you are loving this show, it would help me out a lot if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always send an email at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with another great episode next Thursday. Talk to you soon.